That is the G-O-O good, good thing about Berkeley's public access, that you can actually get a 2.5 hour slot. I mean, I don't know if you can get it anymore, but when we started in 2001.
You could, yeah. It's probably harder now.
Yeah.
Okay, well, if I start to talk too fast, you'll know that I'm just channeling my energy from my
other
my
public
usual
access.
Show. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. L. A. Last night. I. G. O. Got a email that P. I. Pirate Radio. Oh, Pirate Cat Radio in San Francisco had been shut down.
Oh,
are you familiar with that?
I'm familiar with Pirate Cat, but I didn't know they had a shutdown again.
Yes.
Oh, that's too bad. They'll reopen. But did they get any equipment raided, or?
They. See. They. Was. T. H. R. E through A threatened B they were threatened by A 10 $10,000
oh ten
fine.
Grand fine oh no. Yuck that's a lot of money
and A D E and a S T A T I station in New York, Brooklyn had a similar thing happen.
Mm-hmm. Yep, even with the low power radio act so close to passing, they don't stop. It's amazing, really.
What is that? Tell us what the low, you just said the low...
Oh, the low power
radio act?
Radio act?
Yeah.
Sure. Are we on air? No.
Yes, we are.
We are.
Yeah.
I thought we'd have some kind of an opening, some kind of a
Frank Sneaky.
A parade or a celebration. Yeah. Okay, so the local community radio act. Well, it's been 10 years in the making. It's been going on forever. And basically about 10 years ago, the legalization of what we call pirate radio was brought forward as a piece of legislation in Washington, D.C. And what happened is it got split up thanks to the help of the National Association of Broadcasters and also National Public Radio, which didn't exactly step up and do the good thing. And so we were able to legalize what we call low power or micro power radio stations, which are sort of 10 to 100 watt frequencies in the sort of spaces in the spectrum in between the large big channels that we hear all the time. And we were able to legalize that in rural areas, but not in urban and suburban areas where there's more crowds on the spectrum, because everyone said, oh, there's going to be all this interference. So 10 years later, they've now spent $2 million on engineering studies to demonstrate that there's no interference whatsoever. And so finally, the Local Community Radio Act of 2009.
We knew that B A back then. We knew that back then, that there was no interference.
Oh, we knew. We knew. Everybody knew. They spent 2 years telling us what everybody knew.
Yeah.
And now it actually has made it through the subcommittee in Congress, and the House of Representatives may vote on it this year, which is a lot further than the legalization of pirate radio has ever gotten before. Mm. So we'll have to see. We're still trying to get the Speaker of the House to sign on as a co-sponsor. So if people want to give her a call and encourage her, that'd be great. But we do have, I think it's up to about 95 co-sponsors in Congress, which is kind of amazing.
Did any S T R I strings, are there any strings attached
to the law?
Yes.
Not really. It's a pretty good bill. It was basically written by the Prometheus Radio Project, who have been the longtime heroes and champions of the effort to legalize low-power radio. So it's a pretty good bill. The only problem is it's taken 10 years to get to this point, and it just got out of committee, which is a good example of how slowly and screwed up things go in Washington.
S. So, before it goes into effect, they're going to shut down. They're going to shut down stations.
Well, they haven't said that, but I wouldn't be surprised.
Judging from the news that we just got yesterday about the two that they did.
Well, they're certainly cracked down harder on people that are doing pirate activities as it comes closer and closer to legalization, because then there'll be no excuse. So the long, proud tradition of pirate radio might come to an end, but on the other hand, we would have legalization for a bunch of broadcasters, which is good.
How would someone
get a low power station?
Yes.
Oh, by filling out a very, very, very long FCC application. I've seen them. It's not simple. It's good to ask for help. It's about a 20-page application. But if there is space available on the frequency, and the upsetting part of the legalization of low-power radio is the more urban the area, the denser in the population, the less space there generally is on the spectrum. So it's harder to get them in cities and urban areas and large radio markets, and it's easier if you live way out in the boondocks. But that said, if you can find an available spectrum and fill out a very long application, you do need to get someone who knows radio engineering to kind of help you. But you can get one. They will be there for the taking if this law passes.
And A, and if is there any thing that would G that would give some of the N E E W new D I G I T digital C H A channels to people to P pirates, no P U.
Oh, the new digital television and radio stations to pirates. I wish they should. Probably not. Most of those channels will belong to the existing broadcasters because when they shifted from analog to digital, you know, the signals are skinnier. So when you used to have one channel, now you have three or four kind of sideband channels. And most of the broadcasters are using those for extra revenue. They're not donating They didn't, you know, they're not donating them to community groups and pirates like I would like, and you would like, and probably lots of our audience would like, but probably not so much. If you look, for example, on the digital television spectrum now, you've got like channel 7.1 and 7.2 and 7.3, and you can see what they're doing with them. I think 7.2 is some sort of new lifestyle channel. And every time I turn it on, it's cooking shows and exercise shows. Not bad, but I could think of other things to do with a TV channel. And I bet you could.
Yes. And I do, and I do.
Okay, well, we can write to them, can make suggestions, but I wouldn't, you know, keep my fingers crossed too much for that one. Probably not too likely.
How M A, how many N E new channels were generated with the digital?
Oh, that's a good question. On the main band, most of the major networks turned one sort of channel into about four. So in the vicinity of about 20 to 25 television channels. On radio, you'll probably be looking at several hundred. So quite a few.
But no PU public, no public access equivalent?
Well, maybe in time. You know, public access channels are donated by the cable companies. So they're not donating the extra sidebands for public access because they're going to donate the minimum amount of channels that the law basically says that they have to.
So but the T E L E television channels are S U supposed to be O U our channels? Ours?
Oh, they're supposed to be our channels? Well, yes, but a lot of that is under threat now, and we can talk a bit about some of the cable, you know, the statewide acts and some of the ways that that's changing. The cable companies, you know, have pretty much said that they sure like to get those channels back if they can, and they're making some efforts to try to do that. So
how?
They should be our channels.
How are they doing that? I was T.A. talking about B.R.I.O.A.D. broadcast, broadcast channels, no, broadcast, yes, W. H, I, which is different, I'm not sure, different.
Okay, well, let me see.
Do you know what he's talking about?
I'm trying to kind of get a sense of it.
Analog versus digital?
Is that what you mean? No.
I know this is such dry technical stuff too, but
will like we the P U public access, no, like the P public. Gives the B R O A D broadcast Channels. I don't know. I don't know.
Well, should I talk a bit about my earlier statement that they're trying to take them back, and maybe we'll get to his...
To what Frank's thinking about.
To your question, maybe? I don't know. Yeah, you can kind of push me in the right direction.
Right, okay, go ahead.
But a couple of years ago, AT&T went into Sacramento, into the California legislature, and they threw a lot of expensive golf tournaments, took everybody out to dinner, and they had a law passed called... DIVCA, Digital Imaging and Video Competition Act, which basically...
After they tried to do that in other states and failed?
They've been trying to do it in every state in the nation, and so far they've succeeded in 26 out of 50, so they got more than half. And they got California in 2006. And basically what they were able to set up is that rather than individual cable companies having to negotiate with individual cities, like Comcast having to negotiate with San Francisco and then with Berkeley and then with Oakland, so the city council could get them in kind of death grip and say, if you want to have monopoly access to all of our customers so they get cable through you and nobody but you, you're going to give us stuff. You're going to give us channels. You're going to give us production facilities. You're going to give us money to train people, to make their own TV. You're going to do all kinds of stuff. And instead it became one negotiation through one statewide agency that negotiated for everybody. And what happens is energetic city councils that were able to get good deals for their city got aced out. They don't get to do the negotiating anymore. So everybody basically got the lowest common denominator. So year by year, as the local franchises ran out and the statewide thing came, you know, came into effect, city by city, you've seen public access lose its funding, lose its cool facilities, reduce the number of channels, get worse channels, bad channel placement. You know, each city sort of has their own catastrophe and their own disaster going on because it's different. But in every case, they are losing things that they already had. And this is going on in Michigan and Illinois and Tennessee and California and really over half the states in the nation. And it's horrible because we've already negotiated. We already won this. And it's such a small thing in return for monopoly cable franchising, which is what they have. You know, it's just a little bit to ask back for that. Because, you know, cable companies make a mint. You know how those cable bills pop up every single year. $2 more.
Every month, it's like a quarter more or 50 cents exactly. more. Like, now, what is that for? There's never any explanation. It's just a little tiny bit
They're
more.
Making money hand over fist. And now with the digital television transition, it's such a pain not to have cable. A whole bunch of people that were holding out now, you know, they got those converter boxes and they fiddled with them and they're like, enough of this crap. And they threw it out and they got cable. So everybody has cable. I mean, everybody that can afford it at all. And, for that, you'd think they could give you two lousy channels and a training facility without screaming, but they do scream. And they go to Sacramento and they throw parties for the legislators and they try to get a better deal. It's awful. We have to stop them and we have to call it out for what it is, which is rotten behavior. So I don't know if that helped or not. Maybe.
B. E. Because they don't C-O-N-T-R control public access.
Yeah, I think you could make a case the corporations don't like things they, that they can't control. Sure, and they don't make money off it. And, yeah, it's out of their control. Absolutely. That's probably what it comes down to.
And they, and in Los Angeles, PU, public access.
Almost dead, right? Almost gone.
Yes. Was the, was doing... E. Exposés.
They were doing some wonderful work down there. They had a very active public access system, 12 to 14 stations. They're putting a lot of pressure on some local city councils and city politicians.
Yes.
And they were not able to get anyone to rise to their defense at all. But, of course, that's what public access is supposed to do. It's supposed to enable citizens to talk back to government. It just becomes a problem when you then have to beg for the right to keep on doing it. But I'm optimistic. There is a federal bill, another one, the Community Access Preservation Act. It's not enough to make public access, you know, forever safe from these attacks, but it would help. And it just got introduced on the federal level, and we're going to fight for it. So we might be able to fix some of the worst damage.
What would it, what would it do?
Well, basically, it would roll back some of the funding levels and the provisions back to 2005 or before, and say that basically the losses that public access sustained due to the change from local to statewide should be reversed and rolled back for a period of time. And it would allow PEG centers to use the funds that they do have for both capital and operation expenses, which has been a problem, because the law has restricted it to only capital expenses. So in a lot of cases, you could buy equipment, but you didn't have any staff to train people to use the equipment, which made it not so useful. You just kind of ended up with a big office with nobody in it. Because as we know, to, you know, for people to be able to come in and to work and to make programming, there have to be people there to help and to train and to teach and to set things up. That's an important part of it. You know, these aren't just television stations. They're really community media centers where people learn and help each other and train and create things.
And S-O-A-P soap? B soap boxes.
They can be soap boxes, absolutely. And say everything that's on their mind. But we need to do that. We're such, you know, passive information consumers. Now we just sit and we watch and things talk to us, and then we click and we click and we click, and it's important sometimes to talk back and not just take things in, but send things out as well.
E S especially when the E A, EQ, U, equipment is getting expensive. No, getting E, A,
easier to use.
And C, cheaper.
Yes.
Easier and cheaper.
Everything is getting easier and cheaper. Camcorders now, they fit in the palm of your hand. You don't have to carry around these mighty big cameras over your shoulder. And distribution has never been simpler.
P, we, R, E, remember the, R, E, E, reel to reel. And then the 3/4 inch cameras, you know, 3/4
inch,
these huge things.
I'm old enough to kind of remember. Yeah, reel to reel, I remember.
Yeah.
Some of the other stuff, not so much, but but yeah, big difference.
Like we do everything. We do everything here. So, you know, we shoot the shows, we put the shows together. It's like all done here.
Yeah, but people have to remember too, because, I mean, yeah, you can make and create everything and you can pop it out over the internet. But we also, we need part of the mass communications infrastructure as well. Because, as you know, you can put stuff out on the web, but there's always a big question of whether anybody's going to see it.
Yes.
And to, you know, to have a part of the broadcast spectrum, the analog
and
digital broadcast
and
spectrum is really important, and we shouldn't give it up without a fight.
Yeah, and
it
I think you're saying
it.
That the stuff that we put on BTV, we do it all here.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. You can do that now.
And L O local is I am important.
Yeah, localism is important. Not everything can be piped in from miles and miles away. Especially now that, you know, we have so few newspapers and we have so little local news provided. I mean, Chronicle is really not in its strongest place, and it was always a little questionable, but it's getting weaker and weaker all the time. And, you know, no competition, so a lot of the, you know, traditional stuff that we relied on for local news, we don't have it anymore. So it's all about really people doing that for each other, like we're doing right now.
A. Yes. But. N. O. Now. B. BTV. Is. You. Using. C. A. Canned programming. Yeah.
They're playing some canned programming?
It's changed. They rely on the canned programming more than before. It seemed like it was all local. You know, there'd be like, you know, a lot of the community calendar because maybe they didn't have enough local stuff to fill the slots. But now it seems like there's a fair amount of stuff that's not local on there. And it's a little, you know, has a kind of a little bit of a slicker look to it, too. Yeah.
Why do you think that they're doing that? Do you think that they're doing it to try to build more audience or to fill up the empty space? Or I'm just asking. I live in Albany, so I actually can't tune into BTV, although I pay attention. But I can't get the channels.
The two. What? T. No, R. E. A. S. O. Reason. The reason. No, reason. The two reasons. Is that it? The two reasons. That. You. S. A. Said. And. L, A, and lazy.
And lazy. Well, I mean, with all broadcast outlets, it's a lot of. I think people always see it as a lot of work to find new community producers and train them and work with them so that they'll be good, because you're not always that good when you first get started, as you know. And it may feel a whole lot easier to just take something out of a can and put it on. But, of course, then you don't create something magical and unique and different.
Yes.
So there's a trade-off there.
Yes. And G. O. O. Good. A. Good. May. M. E, A, may mean, L, O, K, look, like, M, A, I, main, mainstream.
Oh, yeah, mainstream. Well, yeah, sometimes people look for the smooth and they look for the polished, and yeah, and those things can be enjoyable, but you don't want to lose the authentic trying to get there, and you can.
Yes, that is the way, it's fairly unrecognizable from the way it was maybe like a year and a half ago, because there's a lot of, It has more of a kind of a PBS look almost, or as if like that's what they're going for, to mm-hmm. kind of have like a certain mix of programs and have it be a certain thing rather than like whoever showed up with a show, mm-hmm. you know, got a slot. And so maybe it's not like the right mix of programs, mm-hmm. but it's like what people have to say mm-hmm. in the community. And oh.
Yeah.
Now. Mm-hmm. If. Now A. R E S T a resident can not right, one of the things that changed is before if you lived in Berkeley you could just drop by with a tape or now a DVD and mm-hmm. they would just play it. That's mm-hmm. like all you had to do was just be a resident.
Yeah.
But now you if you're now they encourage you to be a member, and if you're not a member and then it's a paper, so you have to pay the money for them to play it.
Well, that's definitely a kind of a gatekeeping mm-hmm. and a kind of like, you know, it's like a barrier to entry. It's an extra step you
yes.
have to take or thing you have to do.
And if you and a are E, S, T, I, a resident, can not have a S, E, a series mm-hmm. if they're not a member. Yeah, you have to be a member to have a series.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be
right.
a member to have a series. So you
and
have
the
to
membership costs money.
Membership yeah. costs mm-hmm. money. And, yeah, mm-hmm. but in, but they, mm-hmm. J, just, E, X, expanded mm-hmm. it beyond, you see, right, you don't have to be a resident anymore to have a show. You just
or
have
to be a member.
You have to be a member,
oh,
but you don't
but
have to
a
be
resident.
A resident. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's not it's not as hyper local like we were
right.
talking about the
right.
localness aspect
right.
of it. So
yeah.
that is different.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And I A asked why. Right, so you printed it out so I wouldn't have to,
oh, yeah.
to remember this.
Well, I think part of what might be happening, and I'm not defending, I'm just sort of putting this out as a possibility, is there's not a lot of functional public access in some of the surrounding towns. So it's possible mm-hmm. that part of what may be going on is a little bit more of a regional
that
expansion. Because,
would
you know,
be G, that would be great if that was the reasoning.
But you don't think so is
what
well,
he,
it
what he
like.
Said was Frank.
I don't know for sure. Yeah. I'm just kind of putting it out there because
Frank had asked the director. He said, what's the reasoning for denying the residents, except BCM's members, the ability to have and sponsor series?
Mm-hmm.
And he said to create a greater value in holding a BCM membership and sustaining the funding of operations.
Okay. Well, that sounds like the answer is money.
Yes. Yes.
Which is, you know, straightforward, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's a problem if you don't have it, obviously, you know, yeah. if the membership fee is a hardship. But, you know, I guess from an operational point of view, it helps to keep people as members.
Who?
Paying fees.
O owns the channel. Who owns the channels, the public access channels?
Well, public access channels are owned by the cable company. They're basically leased to the public access operator, which in this case is the Unified School District. I believe that actually technically is the operator through BCM, but cable company owns them. They're leased. Except for the fact that, you know, technically the cable company leases all their channels from We the People, if you want to get philosophical about it. And, of course, that's true, but they do belong to Comcast. Mm. So in terms of changing that policy, you would probably, I'm trying to think, you'd probably have to go through the Unified School District in the city of Berkeley to put some pressure onto BCM if that's what you wanted to do.
How? But why did the F, the C, I, why did the city, C, O, U, city council, why did they get in to the Z, no, A, C, T, why did they get into the act?
How did the city council get into the act?
Get into the act when they, T, R, tried to M, O, move my show. What did you say? How did this, or why?
The city council get into the act.
Why did they? When they tried to move, oh, this is back in the last time? Is that what you're saying? Yes. At, to, you, if, the, oh, if it's the school. So there was a point at which...
I might not know the answer, but explain to me what happened.
Okay, so there was a point at which we were notified by, like, a local news newspaper or TV channel that the board of BCM was having a meeting that night, and they were going to discuss moving Frank's show, which started in the adult time frame, was like 10 or 11 o'clock, to, like, 2 or 3 in the morning.
Okay.
There, this was 6 years ago. Yeah, or so. I know it was like many years ago.
Was it about? Was it about sort of obscenity or nudity?
Adult.
Or?
Yeah, it was that.
It was about adult
programming. Yeah.
Okay, I have an idea maybe why that happened, but you can go ahead and tell me what else.
Well, so when we were notified about that, we showed up at the meeting, and so did, like, Channel 7 News show up. And then a number of other people that were supporting us. And so, of course, the BCM board completely backed off on it and said, we need to rethink this. So in the meanwhile, it stays the way it is.
Okay.
And then at some point, because they weren't doing anything, the next thing we know, the city council is discussing it. And they're trying to come up with a new law that would change the adult time thing to start, like, at a later time, which essentially was another way to get Frank's show to start later. They just changed the whole adult thing. So the adult program wouldn't start at 10, which I guess is, like, the national...
Yeah, 10 is like the common.
Yeah, but it would start at like midnight or 2. They were just as late as they could get it and have people go for it. And so they spent many city council meetings discussing this. They had the city attorney do a study, and they voted on it, and everybody but one person supported that, moving it to
moving
a later
it.
Point. Yeah. It was F... R, O, N. Well, it was front page news at the time, mainly because Frank wrote a lot and submitted a lot of letters to the editor, and they all got published in all the local papers.
Sure,
and we got
sure.
on the front page a lot of times, and so everybody knew about it. And so there was pressure on them that way.
So why did the city council get into the act? Well, I mean, part of it might have been some pressure... I've had, you know, right around the time of the, what did they call it? The Janet Jackson wardrobe malfunction at the Super Bowl. There became a lot of carrying on about obscenity, and they very much started tightening fines for slip-ups and accidents. And unacceptable language and obscenity concerns and so on. So part of it may have been worries about an FCC fine. Part of it might have been worries about complaints from parents.
But so this was probably before, this was definitely before the Janet Jackson thing.
Oh, okay, because there was a whole national obscenity sort of
what year was it, Corey?
Yeah, so that might have been part of it. And then the city council...
It was 2002.
Oh, okay. And then the city council was probably just, you know, trying to create policy to support what the Unified School District of BCM wanted to do. Because I guess there was no law or sort of that they really could fall back on to defend their position. So they were trying to create cover for them and say this is the policy of the city. And it, so did it work? What timer are we on?
Oh, it failed. Okay. It failed, yeah. They had one vote, and it never came up for the second vote, because the ACLU got involved in our support and actually showed up at a city council meeting and read a letter that they had sent to the mayor and everybody, and the second vote never happened. It just disappeared.
Everybody just backed down.
Yeah.
Well, they were kind of creating a law out of whole cloth just because somebody wanted to do something. It doesn't always work.
Yes. F. D. S. S. So. I don't know what to ask. You don't know what to ask at this point. And this is going back to the current situation. Yeah, like what is the... I think as people that are so involved in public and have been involved for so many years, it was hard for us to watch everything change, because it went from like feeling like a very community kind of place and to you know, we're in charge, these are the rules, if you don't do it we don't play your show, kind of a lot of this kind of thing. And then losing the local stuff in place of it being this canned stuff. So it wasn't like the, I mean, some of the programs that were there got the boot because they created rules that would make those shows. Like we had a number of shows that all got the boot because they made very specific rules that addressed that show so that it couldn't play. They said something like one person can host two shows in one day. You know, and
which
so
only applied to
us, you know,
it's a rule just for you.
Yeah.
Oh, compliment.
Not the first time, but,
yeah, I mean,
so it's not like they didn't, and that, like the one show they booted was us, putting on, local bands and then putting them on the air, you know, so it was like a very local show, and in place of it, it's like cooking shows from Denver, and so, you know, they're like old, they're not even current, like, they would, could have S said A S H a show can not be A I aired for A Y for a year. Or they could put, oh, what do you mean, like repeats? They could say if you've played something on air, you have to wait another year to replay it or something like that. That would not be A about content, but the H O S tea, but the host is about content.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I mean, there's always this pressure in community media institutions. I mean, on the one hand, they want to attract more listeners and more donations, and they think they're going to get that by being more polished and more professional.
Yes.
And, you know, one is empathetic with the desire to survive, because it is hard. And then on the other hand, you end up pushing people out and you end up destroying the whole community spirit of the thing. And right. It always goes like this. I mean, I've been involved in the KPFA business for years and years and years, which on a bigger platform is much the same issue.
Yes.
Of, you know, pushing and pulling and pushing and pulling. And there's got to be a balance in the middle, but it's darned, you know, it's darn hard to find.
I just heard. KPFA. Is purging music.
Well, they're purging some music. The music that's on from 10 to 12 in the mornings, is being purged.
Yes.
This is true.
Yeah.
And some of those programs have been on for years and years and years, and it's sad.
Yeah. Yeah. B4 TA talk for more talk shows.
For more talk shows and more public affairs and more news. Which, if it's good public affairs and news, might be okay. I'm not sure, but it certainly was done in a way that upset the people who had those programs for a significant period of time and put their heart and their souls into playing the music of the world for people. And, you know, were kind of abruptly and rudely shoved to the side on very short notice. And I understand why they're upset. So we'll have to see what ensues.
They don't SEC. It is the M music. No, MI. It's the mix that MA makes it work.
Yeah, they may not see that. I agree. And I think it's also a mix on public access. It's a mix of all the different voices in the community. And if you manage too hard, I think you can definitely lose that.
Yes.
And hopefully that won't happen.
It is D-E-F-D-I. Defining, definitely, not U-S-E user friendly anymore. Yeah.
Oh, Berkeley Community Media is not as user friendly as it used to be.
No.
User friendly is a good trait. That's too bad.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to hear that. But at least you're still kicking away, and you've got these 2.5 hours that we're doing here.
Yes.
Which is something.
And I don't know. I don't know of any other public access channel that would give us 2.5 hours.
Yeah, I think you might find that hard. There are still some things in Berkeley. That are special.
But Is there anything else about that? Well, I don't know. I think I think maybe we covered what we were interested in knowing. It sounds like if we wanted to do anything, we'd have to go through the school or the city or something to try to, which, you know, ain't going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, if you want my opinion about it, yeah. I think to some degree there's going to be a certain amount of empathy for... the idea of keeping the station a little more professional, a little more polished to help it survive and have it build members. And I think it's important to be a little empathetic to that part of it because, you know, that there's always kind of a struggle to survive and they have to do that. Mm. So I think probably if you were trying to sort of affect these policies, it might be about sort of keeping that mix vital, about keeping a certain percentage absolutely 100% reserved for local voices. Mm. And just saying, you know, it can't go below this quota or this standard because otherwise it's not really serving Berkeley. Mm. Or, you know, X number of people need to be trained or maybe some sort of, you know, just reassure us that you're going to keep a position here in the middle that's not going to lose what's been wonderful about it, as you try to strengthen certain other aspects.
It is.
And then maybe
hard.
Yeah, a little counter pressure.
Two. Well, we haven't had a lot of success in engaging people in a conversation about it. Mm-hmm. Frank has written a couple fairly detailed letters to them, like where we actually snail mailed it, you know.
Oh,
and,
wow.
You know, and you know, nobody's replied to it. We've gotten like just, you know, really brief things from the director, we're going to talk about it, and then we never hear about it again.
You could always go around to some other entities.
He invited the whatever members of the board that wanted to be on a show like this, you know, where we could just talk about things.
Oh, and you invited them on?
Oh, and they, nobody, well, actually we did get one response. Mm. They said the B.R.O. Brown Act doesn't allow it.
I don't think that's... Well, I think you should pester them to be on the show. I do think that. I don't think you should give up, and I think you should push them, and you should get them in the chair. It's always good to talk.
I-W-I-Q. Frank actually wrote back and quoted the Brown Act. He actually, like, got the information that showed that it didn't apply.
Yeah,
and nobody
that sounds
replied.
Like a lame excuse, and that sounds to me like they're avoiding you.
Yeah,
and I think
absolutely.
You should call them on that.
Yes. They have not written back. No, when he quoted the Brown Act to show that it didn't apply, nobody ever wrote back to that.
Okay, well, I made my sort of, you know, loose defense of some aspects of what they're doing, and I did feel obligated to kind of do that because I want them to survive. Yeah. But that said, I don't think they should avoid you. I don't think you should take no for an answer. And I think you should make them appear on the show.
Me.
And talk about what they're doing
too.
And why.
Me too.
Because I'm just hypothesizing about what they're doing and why. I don't know for sure. So don't give up. Be persistent. And, don't let them chicken out. They should do that. And I will say that to David Joliffe next time I see him.
Great.
I mentioned that I was going to be on your show.
What did he say?
He thought it was interesting. He asked what we were going to talk about. I said I wasn't, you know, quite sure. I had some ideas, but I wasn't quite sure. But he encouraged me, and I'm going to suggest strongly that he do the same.
Good. Yeah, that's great. Because... We need BTV. We need BTV.
We do, and we need a BTV that works for the people in Berkeley. I mean, there's no doubt about that. It needs to survive, but it needs to survive as something that actually works for people.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's no point.
There should be W. No, there should be E. Enough L. Local programs. There should be enough local programs at 2. F. Fill.
Oh, to fill the whole dial?
You think that there are, or what do you mean by should? The C H A, the channel.
Mm-hmm.
That there should be, you think that there are, that you think there are out there and enough local stuff to fill it.
Well, I don't doubt that if you energetically train people and you encourage them and you look for them, that you'll find them. I mean, I think community media always kind of works that way. If you wait for them to come to you, maybe, maybe not. But if you go out there and try to generate things, I think that they're there to be made.
Yes.
There's always a lot of talent out there.
I. Always. S. A. I always said. I. Could. Should. Right. When we had like a whole bunch of shows on BTV, he would always say, I shouldn't be able to have all these shows on BTV. There should be so many other local people that want to have shows on BTV that there shouldn't be enough space for one person to have this many shows.
I'm glad to hear you say that because I'm a big advocate of sharing time and getting a whole bunch of different voices on the air.
But you know, to get knocked off for canned stuff.
That's what's in your craw.
That's not.
I see.
That's
what you're
a whole different thing.
You've got to kick me off. Kick me off for the right stuff.
The local stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I agree.
And I was in. I was on 7, 6 hours a night. Some nights that Frank was 6 hours a night.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
That's so
long. We had a lot of space on the air. A lot of people saw our shows. B E because I S A saw. Well, the years ago, because we had BTV on all the time, we just have it on if we're in the kitchen or something. And we noticed they played the community calendar all the time. And we had this, like, we're into, like, 400 or so episodes of this show.
Yeah.
And so we had all these shows, and there was nothing but community bulletin board from, like, you know, maybe, like, midnight to 6 a.m.
or
something.
Which is silly, yeah.
Yeah, so, and it wasn't like they had a lot of community bulletin board stuff either. And so Frank had suggested at that time the director was a lot more user-friendly, and we had like a relationship with the person, and he said, you know, you could always replay my shows in the middle of the night.
If
you're not doing anything else, a great idea. So it was like a different episode on every night, because we had hundreds of episodes. And
you
so
just pull one out of the vault, basically.
We just replayed them, you know, and so that went on for years. And I think it was a pretty popular, you know, we got a lot of feedback.
Well, it would definitely be better than watching the community calendar.
Yeah.
I mean, that's dead on arrival. It's important, but no one's going to sit there and watch
or the canned stuff. So now it's not that they don't have the community bulletin board all the time, but it's all these, like, you know, old cooking shows and old comedian shows from, you know, Denver and Boulder and stuff like that.
Yeah, I have to say the cooking shows don't really do it for me. That was my big complaint about, to get on a bigger scale, about KQED in San Francisco with the darn cooking shows.
Oh. The local, I mean, there have been in the past local cooking shows, which were great. P, U, Punk. C, cook. C, They had heavy metal musicians and their girlfriends, and they had a cooking show. And, oh man, it was precious. It was precious. So that's like the local, you know. It was funky, but it was just precious. But it was good. I mean, they made food and it looked good and it looked edible and stuff. But you know,
and they were heavy metal musicians.
Yeah, but.
But the Denver stuff is
but that's
not so
gone,
good.
And now you have like a, you know, a cheap copy of like the Food Channel stuff. You know, it's kind of a step down from that, but it's like way slicker than the heavy metal cooking show.
Yeah,
doesn't have
silly.
The character.
That's silly. Somebody in Berkeley can do something better than that.
Yeah,
I don't have a doubt. Just gotta find them, train them,
and you and they. Would, were, would get VIE viewers. It seems like they would attract more viewers. Is that
oh,
what you're
with
saying?
A better show
with the
than
local
that, than
stuff?
That, yeah. Think so. I mean, it's always there's no arbitrons for public access, like, so it can be really hard to tell who's watching and how much they're watching. But I think you're right, and based on my own viewing patterns and people that I know, I'm pretty sure you're right.
Yes, we were shocked when you know Frank ran for president.
I've heard
the
that.
Last election, and so we were out there a lot with the campaigning and stuff, and we did the How Berkeley Can You Be thing 2 years in a row because
of
the campaign.
Yeah.
And we were just like, whoa, everybody knew Frank. Everybody knew the show. And we realized, you know, they had a lot of viewers that I don't think they even realized they had because they're not the kind of people that are going to call the station.
Yeah, well, you can't judge the people that call the station.
Yeah.
I mean, it's such a tiny fragment. Right, it's, you know, it's such a tiny fragment. But.
Right. There.
But everybody knew you, huh?
Yeah, everybody knew Frank, and they mainly knew him from the cable show.
Okay.
They.
So they're watching.
Yeah. There. Have always been a MY, a myth that no one watches.
A myth, yeah, I think so. I've heard that a lot, and when you're doing public access advocacy work, they talk about that all the time. Nobody ever watches those shows. It's like, well, how do you know? Can you prove nobody watches the shows? And they can't, but it's an easy thing to say when you want to dismiss it. And are you running for president again?
He's starting to get a lot of inquiries about it. I don't think he was planning on it.
Okay, I was just curious.
But people are PRE pressuring. Well, it seemed like after the election, it all kind of stopped. And then recently, it seems like people are talking about his platform again and ask. He's getting emails and different people are talking on the street. And
well, I guess everything kind of stopped after the election.
Right.
Everyone was waiting for, you know,
good
change
quotation
to happen. Marks
right.
to start.
Right.
I guess
and maybe now
realize.
They're starting to think it ain't going to happen and they're more interested.
Well, not quite that easy. Yeah.
Yeah.
You have to consider some other options here that might not be the one.
Yeah. I was not G.O. going to run the first time.
Oh.
It started as a T-shirt. Mikey had a Curly for President in 08 from the Three Stooges.
Mm-hmm.
And we were trying to think of a birthday present for Frank. Mm-hmm. And Mikey does design. And he said,
good.
Oh, we could do a Frank Moore for President T-shirt. Oh, ha, ha, ha.
Yeah, it's
so
a good T-shirt.
So we did it. And then people started approaching Frank and asking what his platform was.
Uh-oh.
And Frank... being a flexible guy, at a certain point he sat down and he typed up a platform, and we just have it on like computer paper. We started giving it to people. INC, including P, T-L-A-N-K, plank, in, on, public access. Right.
Oh, it was in there. In the
he had a plank on public access.
That you may be the first presidential candidate that ever did.
But people would read it and they would go, the platform? You mean the whole, that part? Or yeah. People would read it and they'd go, seriously, I would vote for you. And so, you know, and then the next thing you know, he's actually, you know, we're really like doing it. Let's say each city and each, quote, media market will have at least two public access channels on radio, broadcast television, cable, and satellite.
Cool.
I think that was it, right? That's the reference to it. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're the only presidential candidate ever with that in your platform. I'm so sure. Maybe
why?
There'll be another one.
Why?
One day. Good question. Because we think that the whole communications infrastructure is something that they give to us and not something that we own and we use and we give to each other. I mean, that's the only answer I can come up with. And it's sad that we think that.
How? Why? Don't. A. C. T. Activists. Use. Public access more?
Oh, that's a really good question because it's a wonderful tool, isn't it? I think they suffer from some of the same conceptions that other people do. Nobody watches it, that kind of stuff.
Yes.
So I think that's part of it. And I also think people get very romantic about the internet now and all of the things they think that they can do on it, and they forget about the other modalities, even though really there's a lot of things that I think television can deliver. And it's very easy to get lost on the internet. It's really, really easy. I mean, people think they're just going to pop it out on the internet and everything's going to happen and it's going to go viral and the world's going to change in it. More often than not, it doesn't.
About guests, you mean? Because, you know, over the course of the years, we've had a lot of people, a lot of activists on the show.
Yeah.
And Frank is always making a case for public access. He'll say, why don't you get a show on public access? And we'll even, like, be willing to help them do it. Not interested. It's just like...
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because we just started doing it, and we're a media organization. Actually, at a certain point, when we, you know, after we started in July, we're like, why haven't we been doing this for 10 years? What was wrong with us?
Yeah.
This is great.
Yeah.
This is the best platform in the world to talk about these things.
Yes.
And so, yeah, we were guilty of it, too. Just didn't. And, I think more people should do it. Especially if you're replacing a canned cooking show from Denver with something really important that isn't getting heard. Because really what goes viral on the internet are like cute cat videos.
Right.
Most of the time it's not really change the world kind of stuff.
Yes. Yes. I. A. L. Also. Get. P. People who want to start like radio, internet radio stations, and they'll come to us and ask for hints or how to do it, and we're always right there, ready to, you know, we'll give them all the info, all the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But what they have a hard time with the scale, because we know how to do it cheap and small. Like, you know, as I say, like we do it out of the house. And and people get hung up on, like, how many listeners do you have? I want to reach thousands of people right away. And they want to do something in some mega way, which they don't have the money to do, to get the equipment or any of it. And so they don't do anything. They just don't do anything.
And then you don't reach one single person.
Right, right.
That's what happens.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, well, you can head trip yourself out of doing anything at all because you raise the expectations so high.
Yes.
And it is better to just get out and do it. Because I was the same way. You know, our public access show, as I told you, it's not a 2.5 hour slot. It's just a quick little interview. And at first I was like, oh, that's not good enough or big enough or anything else. And then I realized, hey, that's, you know, that's a half an hour interview that's either on the air or not on the air. And people will see it or they won't see it. Right. And it's more important that they see it.
Yes.
And we'll get our 2.5 hour slot later. Maybe we'll take over when you retire, Frank.
I am not retiring anytime soon. They wish. They I J. U. Just. V. A. M. Just M. G. O. O. Good. At. G. R. A. Grabbing. Opportunity. You're just good at grabbing opportunity.
Oh.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. M. Most people. I mean, that's, is that what you mean? But that's our experience. Like, we, that seems like people aren't good at grabbing opportunity. When there's something there and they can just do it, they don't, they kind of have something in their head about how it's supposed to go. And then meanwhile, it's like, it's come and it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And Frank is real good at like spotting opportunity and pouncing on it and kind of adapting whatever he thought he was going to do to what is there to do.
To what, to what's actually there in front of you. Well, then you make the most of what comes your way.
Yes.
Which is the idea.
Yeah.
And you don't miss it because you're looking for something else besides what's there.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. I don't you and understand why BTV don't have more local shows.
Yeah. Well, I mean, part of it is probably people's awareness that they're there. Mm. Part of it is probably their, do people actually watch public access, you know, bias and stereotype that we talked about. And part of it is, you know, barriers to entry, the ease of it happening. How easy is it to get trained? How easy is it to apply for a show? How easy is it to find people to help you when you're first new and you don't know what you're doing?
I have not... been trained.
Never? It just goes to show you that it can be done.
Right. Yeah, well, we did go to the Art Institute, and that was like the performance video thing. So they did show us how to use the camera. So that's the extent of our training.
Yeah, well, you may be special. A lot of people, though, I will tell you, would not step out in front of a camera without some sense of having been trained or prepared. They're just too chicken.
Right. Yeah. How about you? T. You. T. You. YouTube.
Oh, okay. Well, they would step out in front of the camera. I mean, I guess I should have said that correctly. Yeah. Isn't YouTube an amazing phenomenon? People make such incredible idiots out of themselves. It shocks me sometimes. I mean, I can't believe it. They pop this stuff up. I guess the difference there is that it's more anonymous in a way. You know, the people that are watching you in general are not people that you know, or at least you don't know that they're watching you. It's kind of out there for millions of strangers. Hypothetically, I mean, millions of people never end up watching YouTube videos, but hypothetically. I wonder sometimes if public access would be more, is more intimate for people because it's kind of community-based.
Yes.
than just sort of slapping up this YouTube thing somewhere on the internet.
Yes.
I don't know.
Yes.
But that's part of what I think. I think there's a anonymity and a protection and sort of inherent in the internet.
That's
why we say such dopey things there.
Was why we W A watch P public access. That's why we watch public access for that intimate community thing.
So you feel that too?
Yes.
Okay. Then I suspect that's probably part of the answer. Well, it's supposed to be neighbors talking to neighbors. I mean, that you know, that's the idea behind it.
A. If. A. Yes. Yes. That is what I am TR trying to TE tell BTV. BTV, BCM.
And you're not always feeling like
falling on deaf ears. Yeah. S, so, C, call, so viewers, call BTV.
And say that.
You want local programming.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair thing to say. And, you know, you guys can, you know, should do everything that you can to survive, but not at the price of losing that local flavor. That's absolutely true. They, you know, they have to commit to that. I will say that. On air.
That's great. Can you T-A talk about, talk to, talk about M-E-D Media Alliance? Can you talk about Media Alliance?
Oh, sure, I can talk about Media Alliance, and I should. How could you let me forget?
And you should tell people who you are in relation to Media Alliance. And your name and everything.
Let's do all of that. Yeah. I know, we eased into starting the show in such a graceful manner. We didn't do any of that. Okay, well, Media Alliance, and I am the executive director of the organization, which sounds really fancy, but on the other hand, it's fairly small nowadays, three or four people. So I'm the boss of a little tiny crew. And we're a media advocacy and activist organization. We've been around since 1976, one of the most long-lived organizations that does this kind of work in the country. Primarily, we focus on First Amendment issues, freedom of speech issues, and really the protection and the sustaining of alternative media. We try to hold the mainstream accountable to listening to the voices of the community, but as people know, that's a bit challenging. So we really fall back on independent media as the answer, or at least a part of the answer. We also get involved in training both nonprofit organizations and individuals in media skills, how to tell your story, how to get an op-ed printed in the paper, how to copy edit and proofread and put out a publication. Basically, you know, all the different ways that you can tell your story and put a message out there. So we're in Oakland at 1904 Franklin Street and on the web at media-alliance.org. And also on Access San Francisco on Thursday nights at 7, twice a month, and maybe, possibly, soon, we're not sure, maybe on Berkeley Community Media as well. I'm hoping.
Oh, have you already made moves to do that?
We've been talking to them. It wouldn't be nearly as many hours as you.
How long of a slot are you going for?
We may be doing a show once a month for about an hour. We're talking about it. We'll see.
That's great.
But I'll be looking forward to it if it happens.
You could, you should. A, I, air, your San Francisco show on Lover.
Oh, wow. Well, we could.
Yeah. Mm.
I've got the tapes. Okay. We'll talk off air about the details of that.
Yeah.
Sure.
Great.
We've got about we've got about 10 of them in the bank so far. In the can. That's
in
the proper
can,
term.
Right.
That's the proper term. They're not in the bag. They're in the
T
can.
E. Tell. Tell. No. N. Ten. W. Weeks. B. U. We'd have a 10-week buffer then.
We'd have a 10-week buffer, exactly.
You do it once a week in San Francisco?
We've been doing them twice a month.
Twice a month, yeah.
Yeah, we probably would stick to about that schedule. Mm. It's just there's so many other things to do. Yeah. But, yeah, it's been twice a month.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what we would do going forward. Mm. But, yeah, maybe so. Mm.
There he is. M. L. U. Lover. Has. Been. A. M. A. Amazing. Lover has been amazing. How. It. How it's grown, or yeah, well, it started. That's Kitty.
Hi, Kitty.
it started mainly as a place to put this show, because this show started on another station, and it was supposed to be. We had gotten on the station was about free speech.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. And Frank had met on the internet somebody who was involved in the station. And in the course of them talking, when the guy said he was involved in this internet station, Frank said, oh, I've always had a fantasy of having a radio show. Oh, I can work it out for you.
Yeah.
Because they were all about free speech. And Frank was investigated by Senator Jesse Helms in the early 90s as an obscene artist.
Congratulations.
And so, you know, all these people knew who Frank was from that, and so they were like excited to have somebody that was investigated by Jesse Helms on their station.
Sure.
But what happened was that what they meant by free speech was that like you could curse on the air, because really they had a lot of rules about what you could and couldn't say, and Frank just naturally seems to gravitate toward that sort of thing. So it's like things would happen, like the DJs would say, I don't think anybody's listening. And if I don't get an email in 5 minutes, I'm going to stop doing my show. So Frank would say during his show, he would talk about that. And he would say things like, I don't think that's true, but even if it is true and someone tunes in and there's nothing on, they won't be, you know, they won't come back. So you have to have something going.
Mm-hmm.
And the management, which was like a couple of guys that Frank said had wet dreams of leaving their day jobs and getting secretaries and making their living from this internet station, which Frank told them is not going to happen, told Frank in a private chat that policy doesn't allow him to talk about things like that on his show. And so Frank would have me read that aloud on his show. And so that's the kind
of thing. And there goes the free speech.
There goes the free speech, right? And then there were other things. They made an announcement.
Wow.
They had a whole lot of DJs. You know, a lot of people doing shows all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
They made an announcement that they had to sell out. They were the first. Yeah, this was before there was internet radio. These were just a couple of geeks that figured out how to do it.
Yeah,
this was like, this was a new concept. Like, people didn't even know what you meant if you said an internet radio station. What do you mean?
Yeah.
What do you mean? So it's like, it's a radio station. It's just something, well, what do you, yeah, like, so, yeah, so then they said that they were going to sell out. And because they needed to get money to pay the monthly bills. And it turns out there wasn't actually any buyers. This was just like they had come up with this idea that they had to sell out. They used the word sell out. And so Frank said, well, how much does it cost to run it? You know, because you have all these DJs. If everybody chipped in $5 a month or something, they
it's
wouldn't.
It's really just a server, isn't it?
Right. I mean. Yeah, well, it would. You know, so they wouldn't give us an amount. They wouldn't tell us what it was. I mean, that was like the whole level of like control, you know. But everybody got real mad as the time went on at Frank, you know, and it got pretty heavy. You know, oh, you hippie. You think you know everything. You don't know how to run things. Da, da, da. Start your own station if you know so much. So it turns out it was $99 a month. That's how all it cost.
Sell out
them.
For $99 a month.
Frank said, "I'm willing to sell out, but it's going to have to be a whole lot more than $99 a month." Start your own radio station if you're so smart. You know, and it's like that was not what we wanted to do. You know, we had a lot of stuff we were doing. P. We H A had a. We had been doing a zine like all through the 90s that was, you know, we were really into it and it was very popular and it was, you know, a beautiful thing that we did. And that was like a lot, plus the performance stuff we did. And so we didn't really have time to take on this project. So, but at a certain point, Frank said to Mikey, figure out how to do a radio station. And so we did it. He gave his notice, you know, even though it was like pretty heavy at that point. We gave notice, didn't skip a week, you know, started lover.com, did all the stuff we had to do to figure out how to do it. It was just us and this guy in Tokyo that Frank had met. He was the first show on Lover, live from Tokyo. And he was a musician who would perform live for like an hour or whatever the show was. It was, you know, really, really nice. And then we would do this show. And that was it. That was the end. Like, Lover was once a week for these two shows. You know.
Yeah.
But that's what Frank's saying. It's amazing how it evolved because, you know, Frank, we put the website up and, you know, Frank's really good at, like, describing things and writing things and people would approach us and were interested in being part of it. And so we started acquiring DJs around the world. And I... G... Got, G-O, go, O, out, like into the internet, you mean? And H, U, hustle. Right. He would go out and he would hustle people to be part of Lover. Right.
Well,
not,
that's, we talked about this.
Not like
BTV. Generate programs.
Not like
BTV. Yeah,
he would hustle, right. And he was coming in with a lot of really cool things. The next thing you know, we have all these shows. And at first, you know, we would kind of, when we went to bed, we would shut Lover off. And one night, somebody came into the chat room and said, why do you always stop? Oh, yeah. I stay up all night and work, and I'm really into your tunes, and you shut it off. He's like, oh, you know, so then we started playing it all night. Next thing you know, it's like a 24-hour thing.
Sheesh.
And it's, you know, 10 years later, it's, you know, a pretty serious part of our lives.
And it's still going.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're right. If you hustle, the programming is out there. I mean, I've never doubted that.
Yes.
It's just a lot of work to find people and keep them going.
Yeah. And a lot of a lot do it. Four, 5 weeks.
Oh, and then they wander off?
Yeah, I mean, we, you know, like Frank came up with this idea of commitment. So he would ask for a 3-month commitment so that people kind of could see a beginning and an end. And then it's renewable.
Okay.
So like we have DJs that have been on for years and years and years, but that we every 3 months we send them an email. Your 3 months are up. Do you want to recommit? Yes, you know. So that the idea was to give people a way out if they try it. But, you know, a lot of people, as Frank said, you know, they'll putter out pretty quick. They won't even make it to the 3-month mark, you know.
Yeah, well, there's an element of chaos. Obviously, people are coming and going all the time.
Yes.
So that's smart of you to try to, you know, make an exit point so at least you know when people are going to disappear.
Yeah.
But that's one of the challenges.
Yeah. Frustrating. Because it's not like, because we know what it takes to run an organization like that, because we do.
Mm-hmm.
And we know what you have to do and how possible it is. And we watch, you know, it's like watching a car wreck, really. You know, because you see that there was something there that they've kind of like done something to kind of take the juice out of it. There's no juice
anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They're not kind of creating, or they don't appear to be creating an environment that would make people want to be part of it.
Which is a problem if people don't want to come through the door.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't feel good in there. That is a problem. It's not what you want.
E-S.
I think KPFA has had that problem for sure.
Especially.
For a long time.
If it is public access.
Well, yeah, public. The word there. Sure. Absolutely.
And A, and access.
Yeah. Need door open is what it means.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah. There. This don't have, this don't have, no, this has been a great show tonight.
Oh, well, it's been really wonderful being here. Thank you so much for having me. And it's been great to get to know the two of you a bit. And I'll be watching lover.com on the internet now that I know. I'm all curious now. And thank you so much.
Yeah. And your name is?
Tracy Rosenberg from Media Lives.
Yeah.
And it's been a pleasure to be here with Frank.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes. Okay, good night.